Well, we do appreciate everyone's presence again tonight. Looks like we just about got a full house tonight. That's great. Very encouraging. Appreciate everybody being here. Visitors from other places again tonight, some from quite a long way away, and just so encouraging, I know, to the group here, but to me as well. Really appreciate your willingness to come out tonight. I know some have been here every service. Some maybe have wanted to be here every service, just haven't been able to do that. And some have been here, you know, visiting from other places, and that's really great. Well, last night we talked about biblical manhood, and we suggested that the ideas concerning what constitutes manhood and what makes a real man, the ideas that are being communicated to our boys and to our parents raising boys, those ideas communicated to them by the culture around us, they're just wrong, aren't they? They're just wrong. Now, I'm tempted to say, if those messages are wrong when it comes to what a true man is, when it comes to what a real woman is, the messages are just wronger. Not sure that's a word, but you know, what's being communicated to our girls by the culture around us as to what constitutes a real woman? This is what you want to be when you grow up. They're terrible messages. They're just awful messages. And so we're going to talk about that a little bit tonight. When I preach these sermons at Oak Mountain, the first one I thought, well, I'll just do biblical manhood, and really didn't have much of a plan to balance that with biblical womanhood. But several asked me, we're going to do one on womanhood now. And I thought, well, no, that really wasn't my plan. But the more I got to thinking about it, and the more I thought about the messages that are being communicated to our young people, I thought, well, that probably would be a good idea. Now, some of you may be asking, but you're not a woman. You're a man. What do you know about womanhood? That's a legitimate question. I understand that. That's a good question. But those who know me, they know I've been surrounded by women all my life. And I had a mother. I had three sisters. Two of them were older, one younger. I was the only boy. I have a wife. I have a daughter. And so maybe I picked up something along the way, you know. So you can be the judge of that. After we get through, you can decide, well, he knew absolutely nothing about womanhood and what a woman should be. Or, yeah, maybe he did pick up a few things along the way. Well, where will a girl learn how to be a woman? You know, where will that happen? We suggested yesterday that ideally a boy will learn how to become a man by watching his father and learning from his father, looking at his example, how he carries himself and what he considers important, and listening to his father as his father teaches the son. And of course, that would be ideal, but in our world, that's not a possibility because there is no father in the picture. And so the boy picks up clues and messages and ideas from the culture around him. Well, a girl is going to do the same thing. She's going to pick up ideas and messages from the contemporary culture, from the culture in which she lives, the environment that she lives in, and she's going to form an opinion about what she wants to be as she grows up, as she grows older. And so she's going to pick that up from friends, older friends perhaps, forms of media like television and movies. And so she's going to see characters portrayed in movies, and she's going to think, well, I want to be like her. When I grow up, I want to be like that. Or she's going to look through the magazines and maybe fashion magazines and think, oh, I want to be like her. I want to be like that. And so these messages are being communicated to her through various places and various media sources especially. And as we said a moment ago, the world is conveying to our girls just really a really bad message about what it means to be a woman. And so we're going to try to clarify that tonight as we talk about biblical womanhood. I'm just going to make a few preliminary observations along the way, and this might take a few minutes, but just bear with me if you will. The world, it seems, wants to direct young girls in one of two or three directions. It suggests that, for example, an ideal woman embraces and emphasizes her femininity. And so to be a real woman, you want to embrace what makes you a woman, especially from a physical point of view. The ideal woman is a physically attractive woman. Now that's a message being conveyed to our girls, isn't it? That's conveyed through the movies. That's conveyed through television. It's conveyed through the fashion magazines. Emphasis on your looks. Emphasis on a certain body type. And if you're going to be a woman of value, a worthwhile woman, a worthy woman, well, then you need to emphasize and embrace your femininity, especially your physical features. And then the culture also teaches girls what a woman's physical features should be. And so if you're going to be a real woman, well, you need to embrace and emphasize your femininity and your physical appearance. And this is what it ought to be. This is the standard. And so that idea is being communicated, again, through movies and television and magazines and advertising and all those kinds of things. And so a young girl gets an InStyle magazine. You know, she wants to look at the latest clothing and things that appeal to her. And she sees this model in the magazine modeling these clothes. And all of them kind of look the same. They kind of have the same body type. And, well, that's really what a sophisticated modern woman looks like. And so those ideas are being communicated to our girls. Well, here, I just want to let you in on a little secret about that. Nobody looks like that. Now, nobody looks like that model in the magazine. Not really. And the secret is, the model in the magazine doesn't even look like that. She doesn't even look like that. Because she has a whole team of people working on her hair and her makeup and her clothes for the photo shoot. And then once the photographs have been taken, they're being altered. They're being photoshopped and airbrushed and all that. So what the final product is only has, you know, just a vague resemblance to the woman that was actually, doing the ad campaign. And when it comes to Hollywood, the actresses, really, if nature were to have its course, yeah, they wouldn't even look like that. They only look like that because they can afford to have some changes made. And so our girls are being taught that they ought to look a certain way, and it's an unrealistic ideal. It's an unrealistic message. But that doesn't keep girls from agonizing over their bodies. Agonizing over it. Develop all sorts of eating disorders because I want to look like the woman in the magazine. I want to look like the actress. And, you know, they don't tell you that the actress eats, maybe she drinks a wheat germ concoction for breakfast and a stalk of celery for lunch and for dinner, a bowl of steam or something like that. You know, it's just unrealistic. And our girls are agonizing over that. Why can't I look like that? Look in the mirror and why can't I look like that? And it's really causing lots of problems. Don't allow the world to tell you what you ought to be as a woman. All right? Don't let the world tell you. This is true womanhood. This ideal. All right? So just don't be drawn in and deceived by that message. Maybe a related message is something like this, that the ideal woman is a highly desirable object of a man's interest. In order for you to be a real woman, a whole woman, a complete woman, you need a man. And so do whatever you have to do to get a man. And that's how you become a complete woman. Really, a modern, sophisticated woman has a successful man at her side. And so girls are encouraged to develop themselves into the kind of woman that can attract the attention of a man, can attract the attention of the opposite sex. And of course, the quickest and easiest way to get a man's attention is, again, to embrace your feminine qualities, physically speaking. And so you want to appeal to him through your appearance, what the Bible might call the flesh. And so make yourself physically attractive, even seductive, so you can draw the attention of a man and you can get a man, and then you can be a complete and whole woman. Well, if you kind of doubt all of that, I would invite you to go to a high school football game this fall. You know, where we live, when high school football season, when it begins, it's still warm. The weather is pretty hot. And so what you see is you see the boys looking at the girls. And you see the girls, they like the fact that the boys are looking at them. And they dress in such a way to draw the attention of the boys. And so what they bought into the message, haven't they? You want to make yourself physically attractive to the boys, and so dress in the way that will pique their sexual interest, although it might not be said that way. I think that's the message that's being taught. It sort of reminds me what happens in the animal kingdom where, you know, you have the male of the species or the female of the, and they're kind of strutting around and showing themselves, and it draws the attention of the opposite sex. Well, our young people are doing the same thing in the way that they dress, in the way that they present themselves to others. They bought into just a terrible, terrible message. Whatever the reason, girls are being taught that their worth is connected to their physical appearance. And it's being conveyed all around us. And sometimes I think we may unwittingly contribute to that message as well. Let me give you just an illustration of that point. Jerry and I were in Target the other day and noticed a lady that, well, she works at Starbucks, where I go through Starbucks sometimes. She works there, so she knows me, and Lisa knows that I'm a customer there, and she works there. Well, I saw her in Starbucks, and she was with her husband, and they had a little girl in the shopping cart. And so what did I say to the little girl? Well, you sure are pretty. I didn't say, well, you sure are a smart girl. I didn't say, you sure are big and strong. I say, you sure are pretty. I thought about that, and I thought, well, what message am I conveying to the little girl? The most important thing you can be is pretty. And that pleases people, for you to be a pretty girl. And so unwittingly sometime, we might contribute to that idea. And so our problem is that our girls are being influenced by this message. Their appearance or attractiveness or prettiness is of the utmost importance. Without realizing or understanding it, they're being influenced in this way. It affects the way they adorn themselves, including, but not limited to, the way they dress. And the message is that the ideal woman is an attractive woman. And to be attractive, you need to emphasize your physical femininity. Now, don't be convinced that's what it means to be a biblical woman anyway. Well, there's another message that's being conveyed to our women that I think is off base. And that is that a modern, sophisticated woman denies, or at least suppresses, her womanhood and her femininity. It's almost the opposite of this first message that we've been talking about. And a woman that's bought into this particular way of thinking is offended when someone says, you know, there are some differences between men and women. You know, she's offended by that. And so she's suppressing her femininity, and she wants to be, really to be evaluated and judged as a competitor to men. She determines her measure of success in those terms. Has she competed successfully against men in a man's world? The highest measure of success is in the corporate office, and considers home life, motherhood, and being a wife a total defeat. Repressive, a denial, almost a theft of her abilities. And so a true woman is one that leaves the home and leaves the family, goes out into a man's arena, an arena that has been traditionally occupied by men, and she gets in that arena and competes, and her success is measured by how well she competes against the men. The worst thing she can imagine for herself is that she stay home and bake cookies. And if you're about my age, maybe that particular statement triggers a thought in your mind. And maybe a corollary to all this is that a woman who's bought into this thinking may be intent on proving to everybody that she can be just as profane and just as crude and vulgar as any man can. And so again, you know, she's sort of competing in an arena traditionally associated with men, and she's trying to measure her success in terms of that competition. Well, one of the mistakes of this kind of thinking is that it measures value and success in terms of financial prosperity and position in the corporate world. She's broken through the glass ceiling. You know, hear that expression a good bit. And so you're truly successful. You really reached your potential as a woman and made a statement for all women everywhere. Break through the corporate glass ceiling and you've competed successfully. I say that's a mistake because even in the world, things like corporate success and financial success and prosperity, even the world can see that those are not true measures of success. Don't accept the idea that your value is tied to competing against men in career. Now, don't be fooled by that. Don't be deceived into that. Well, another message is you can have everything. you can have it all. And you can be successful in business, and you can have a successful marriage, and you can be a successful mother, and you can just have everything. When the truth is that that's hardly possible for a single individual. Choices have to be made. And for the most part, those who are successful corporately in that particular way, they're sacrificing family. And those who have strong families and are supportive of their husbands and raise their children, active in family life, well then, they're sacrificing the other. Sacrifices and choices have to be made. And in today's environment, the sacrifice that's made is often family. And that's a tragedy. Well, if these are not the goals of women who are Christians, to associate their value and being a worthwhile woman with their physical appearance or measuring their success in the corporate world or as a competitor to men, if those are not the goals of women who are Christian, what are the goals? What are our goals to be? If our girls are not to look to Cosmopolitan for advice, where should they look? Well, popular entertainers and feminists are not the answer, are they? I guess maybe I'm just getting old, but it's disturbing. I'm sure it was this way when I was younger as well, to see women who are entertainers basically wear very little, take moves from the strip club and put them into their act, and tell young girls, this is what you want to be. That's a terrible message, isn't it? It's awful. But that's what's being done. Where should we go? Well, I believe the answer is that Jesus is the role model. You know Jesus is the role. Now, yesterday we talked about Jesus being the role model for men. If you want to know how to become an ideal man, a real man, look to Jesus. He is a real man. Well, a female disciple of Jesus should look to him just as male disciples do. And the qualities that he possessed are as important for women to possess as they are for men to possess. And so what were those qualities we talked about last night? Gentleness, humility from Matthew 11 verse 29, holiness, being innocent, undefiled, separated from sinners, Hebrews 7, 27. He did not return evil for evil, but entrusted himself to the one who judges righteously. 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 21. We could add to that Acts 10 verse 38, went about doing good. And so it's important for women to model themselves after Jesus and develop those qualities in themselves, just as it is important for men to do that. But we're going to look at one passage, especially tonight, 1 Peter chapter 3, and try to draw from this passage the principles that ought to guide us as young women growing up and guide us as parents who are teaching our girls how to become women. 1 Peter chapter 3, we're going to begin reading in verse 1 and go down through verse 6. Now the passage is sort of in the middle of a longer passage or bigger passage that in which Peter is addressing various members of the household. And so he addresses husbands in chapter 3 and verse 7 and slaves in chapter 2 and verse 18. And here he addresses women. Now there are other passages like this in the New Testament. Ephesians 5, 22 through 6, chapter 6 verse 4, husbands and wives and children and servants. Colossians 3, verses 18 through chapter 4 and verse 1. Again, wives and husbands and children and fathers and servants and masters. And so Peter has a passage that deals with these various members of a household as well. And so he says in verse 1, in the same way, you wives, be submissive to your own husbands, so that even if any of them are disobedient to the word, they may be won without a word by the behavior of their wives, as they observe your chaste and respectful behavior. Your adornment must not be merely external, braiding the hair, wearing gold jewelry, putting on dresses, but let it be the hidden person of the heart, with the imperishable quality of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is precious in the sight of God. For in this way, in former times, the holy women also, who hoped in God, used to adorn themselves, being submissive to their own husbands. Just as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, and you become her children if you do what's right, without being frightened by any fear. We're going to just draw out four qualities from this particular passage and try to talk about them a little bit in the time that we've got left. So Peter is telling women that the most important area for them to develop is the hidden person of the heart. If you got an older version, the hidden man of the heart. Not the outer appearance, but the inner qualities is what women ought to develop. And he does that by creating a contrast. Not this, but this. And so that's simply a way of focusing our attention on the point that he's trying to make. And so he says, your adornment must not be merely external, but let it be the hidden person of the heart. So not the external appearance, but the internal, the spirit, the heart, the inner qualities is what he emphasizes. Women of the ancient world, like women today, would go to great lengths and great expense to fix their hair. I don't know if you've ever researched that any, but it's pretty amazing to look at some of the ancient statuary and pictures of women, long hair, but braided and coiffed quite elaborately. Is that a word, coiffed? Quite elaborately. And that would be very expensive. It would take a long time. And just kind of like today. And so if a woman wanted to impress maybe her girlfriends or impress others, well, she'd spend a long time getting her hair done. Very elaborate hairstyle. And that way she could not only look attractive, but impress others with her status in the community. And so Peter says, now, I want you to understand what a true woman is. She doesn't emphasize her external appearance, the way she fixes her hair. She doesn't necessarily wear the latest designer clothing. And of course, back then, women like to wear the latest styles, just like women today like to wear the latest styles. And they like jewelry, like gold and, you know, pearls and those kinds of things. And so Peter is saying, look, you're placing your emphasis in the wrong place, if that's what you're emphasizing. Your appearance shouldn't be focused merely on the external, braiding the hair, wearing gold jewelry, putting on dresses. But again, let it be the hidden person of the heart. Well, Paul makes a similar point in 1 Timothy chapter 2. And there, I believe what he's saying is that, you know, when a woman emphasizes, a man for that matter, but in this particular passage, a woman, when a woman emphasizes her external appearance by spending money on expensive clothing and jewelry and her hairstyle and things like that, really she's emphasizing something that is inconsistent with the gospel that we claim to adhere to. So look at verse 9 of 1 Timothy chapter 2. Likewise, I want women to adorn themselves with proper clothing, modestly and discreetly, not with braided hair and gold or pearls or costly garments, but rather by means of good works, as is proper for women making a claim to godliness. So if you're making a claim to godliness, well, then your appearance needs to be consistent with that. It's inconsistent to make a claim to godliness, which denies the elements of the world, material elements of the world. That's not our focus. That's not our interest. And so with our mouth, we're saying we deny that. And yet at the same time, we place a great deal of emphasis on our physical appearance. So you can see how those two things are inconsistent. And so he's saying, I want your appearance, the way you present yourself to others, to be consistent with the godliness that you profess. And so don't put an emphasis on such things as braided hair and gold or pearls or costly clothes. Those things emphasize the physical, the material, the flesh, financial prosperity, while Christians are to be focused on the spirit, the inner man, and the inner character. And I'm not suggesting that Christian women should look frumpy and dowdy and unfashionable and homely. I find it interesting and impressive. In the book of Esther, chapter 2, Esther's a young Jewish woman. You remember the story that the Vashti, the queen, was dismissed, and so a new queen was sought for, and so they searched through the empire and they selected certain women to come as, and they were going to be potential queens. And so eventually Esther was chosen. But in Esther chapter 2 and verse 7, Esther in a complimentary way is described as beautiful in form and face. That's impressive. Here's a young Jewish girl, and in her description, she's described as beautiful in form and face. And so we're not suggesting that a woman should be frumpy and dowdy and homely. And the Bible appreciates beauty in a woman. Incidentally, in Genesis 39 and verse 6, Joseph is described in just about the same way. As a man, of course, he's a big, strong, handsome man. But an emphasis on outer beauty is secondary at most. There are more important things. Peter mentions four qualities in the passage that we read just a moment ago. A biblical woman should be chaste or pure and respectful in her behavior. That's verse 2. And that's produced by a gentle and quiet spirit, or a humble and peaceful spirit. And so remember, in this particular passage, she's trying to win over her husband who's not a Christian. And so how does she do that? Well, she develops a good godly Christian behavior, and over a period of time, her husband sees that, appreciates that, and he decides, I want to be what you are. You're a quality person. And so I want to be what you are. So let's just think about those qualities. To be chaste or pure, and again, that's verse 2, to be chaste or pure is often associated with sexual behavior. Was in the ancient world, just like it is in our world today, if we say that a girl is pure, we usually mean something about her sexual inexperience, or chaste, of course, is used in the same way. And that idea is included in this word, but the word has a wider range than that. She's to be free from all misbehavior, innocent and upright. Paul tells Christians, keep yourself pure. 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 2, and no doubt he means sexually pure, but in other ways as well, keep yourself pure. And so a godly woman is going to emphasize purity, chastity, those kinds of things. That's a real woman in God's sight. In the book of 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 12, Paul tells Timothy, let no one look down on your youthfulness, but rather in speech, conduct, love, faith, and purity, show yourself an example of those who believe. Well, purity is not a highly valued quality in women these days, is it? To be pure, especially as you grow to a certain age, to be pure, to be chaste, not a highly prized quality. Even by women themselves, you know, some women would consider that, a flaw in their life, a shortcoming in their life, to be inexperienced in the ways of the world. But it's very valuable in the sight of God. And so 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 4, right at the end, that these things are precious, the idea is valuable. These things are valuable in the sight of God. And so if you want to grow to be a godly woman, well then develop this sense of purity, purity in heart, which then produces purity in action and purity in body as well. She's to live in the fear of the Lord. And so your husbands are going to observe your chaste, your pure and respectful behavior. And so she lives in fear. That is the fear of the Lord. She lives in the fear of the Lord. She's to demonstrate the appropriate respect for him and obey his teaching. You might remember the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 12, after Solomon, the writer, experimented with this and that, trying to find the true meaning of life and real significance in life. He says the conclusion, when all has been heard, is this: fear God and keep his commandments. This is the whole duty of man. Fear God, keep his commandments. Those two things are closely related, aren't they? To fear God and keep his commandments. The person who fears God keeps his commandments. And so this woman lives in the fear of the Lord. And so she has the proper respect for God, and she obeys his commandments. In the book of Proverbs, chapter 1, verse 7 says, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction." And so the woman is impressing her husband with her chaste behavior, her modest behavior, and the fear of the Lord, which governs her actions. Peter also tells the woman to be gentle and quiet in spirit. We talked about gentleness a little bit already, I think last night. But to be gentle is to be meek and humble and unassuming and considerate. It's one of the qualities mentioned in the fruit of the Spirit. Love, joy, peace, patience, faithfulness, goodness, kindness, gentleness, self-control. And so she's to be a gentle woman. She's to be meek. Blessed are the meek is one way the word is translated. The meek shall inherit the earth. Again, not a highly prized quality in the world, meekness or gentleness, but it's highly prized by God, and it's found in the Messiah as he rode into Jerusalem gentle on a donkey. Matthew chapter 21 and verse 5. And so a woman is to be chaste, living in the fear of the Lord. She's to be a gentle woman and quiet in spirit, peaceful in spirit. She lives in peace and harmony with others. Romans 12, verse 8, we're told, as much as in you lies, as much as it's possible, live in peace, be at peace with all men. She's not to cause problems or stir up strife. She's not a troublemaker. Titus 2, verse 3, Paul tells Titus that women are not to be malicious gossips. And, you know, that can cause a lot of problems. She's to be gentle and quiet, which is in contrast to loud and disruptive. Maybe you've known women that are loud and disruptive. Hardly in keeping what Peter has to say. Or outrageous. If you look at the entertainers, you know, the more outrageous, the better. You got to get the people's attention some way, or you're not going to be successful. You're not going to make any money. And so the more outrageous the behavior, the more outrageous the language, the more outrageous the costume, the better. But a biblical woman, she has a gentle and quiet spirit. Now, again, it's important to note, just like we did last night, that these qualities don't suggest weakness. They don't especially denote spiritual weakness. A biblical woman is not mousy. Now, she's very strong. She stands against the tide of an ungodly culture and stands strong in her godly character. The English Standard Version says, "Let your adorning be the hidden person of the heart with the imperishable beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit." Now, there's beauty in the sight of God, isn't it? Now, it's not external beauty that's important to God. It's the internal beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit that's precious in the sight of God. And so that expression, verse 4 at the end, is precious in the sight of God, is to be seen in contrast with the expensive hairstyles and the gold jewelry and the designer dresses. Now, that's valuable in the sight of men, but these qualities we've been talking about, being gentle and quiet and living in the fear of the Lord and being pure and chaste, that's what God finds valuable. And if we're interested in what God thinks, well, then those are the qualities that we're going to emphasize as well. Last night we suggested that what the Bible teaches about being a real man, is countercultural. Well, if there's anything countercultural, it's what should a biblical woman be? What should a woman be? Completely opposite to what the world is communicating to our girls. And so we need to be on guard about that. We need to be watching that, making sure our girls don't buy into these just terrible messages that are coming their way. Well, who can we turn to in the Bible that would give us a good example of a woman like this? Well, maybe you're already ahead of me. How about Proverbs 31? How about that? Here's a woman that is the kind of woman that she ought to be as far as godliness is concerned. She values the things that God values in a woman, and she emphasizes those things. And I suppose that this is as good a place to go to learn what a biblical woman ought to be as anybody. We're not going to read through the whole passage. We're just going to maybe cite a few verses. Beginning in verse 10, it's an excellent wife who can find her worth is far above jewels. And so you know the passage. We won't read through it all. We'll just highlight some points. She possesses these qualities. She provides for herself. Verse 22 says, she makes coverings for herself. Her clothing is fine linen and purple. And so she doesn't neglect herself. Remember we said earlier that we're not saying that a biblical woman is homely and kind of frumpy and, you know, is unkempt and doesn't care. No, that's not what this woman does. She makes coverings for herself. She's paying attention to herself. She's attentive to her own needs. But she's also committed to her family. Verse 15, she rises also while it is still night and gives food to her household and portions to her maidens. And so her maidens would be maybe household servants that work within her family. And so she makes sure that everybody has what she needs, even if she has to get up before the sun comes up to do it. And then verse 27, she looks well to the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. And so she's not idle. She's working. She gets up before the dawn and she's working just to make sure everybody has what they need. She works to provide for her family. Verse 13, she looks for wool and flax and works with her hands in delight. And so she's busy. You know, she's not just a woman of leisure expecting others to wait on her. She's committed to her family and works to provide for them. She's willing to sacrifice for her family. We noted verse 15 a moment ago. She rises also while it is still night, gives food to her household and portions to her maidens. And so here's a woman who's sacrificing. How many mornings would there be where she just, I just soon stay in bed this morning, but she gets up. That's what her family needs. And so she gets up, she sacrifices to make sure that they have what they need. She's supportive of her husband. Look at verse 11. The heart of her husband trusts in her, and he will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not evil all the days of her life. She's supportive of him. She does him good. She's helping him. And so again, she's devoted to her family. She finds fulfillment in her family, actually, doesn't she? All right, and so we continue. Verse 16. She considers a field and buys it. From her earnings, she plants a vineyard. And so we might say she's shrewd. We might also say she's wise. Verse 16, she opens her mouth in wisdom, and the teaching of kindness is on her tongue. And so she's wise and shrewd. And verse 17, she girds herself with strength and makes her arms strong. And so she's a strong woman. She's generous. Look at verse 20. She extends her hand to the poor. She stretches out her hands to the needy. And so she's a generous person. She's unafraid. Verse 21. She's not afraid of the snow for her household, for all her household are clothed in scarlet. And so she's taken measures to protect them against the cold, for example. And so she's not afraid. She's not afraid of what the winter might bring. She's dignified. Strength and dignity are her clothing. She's optimistic. She smiles at the future. She opens her mouth in wisdom. The teaching of kindness is on her tongue. And so not only is she wise, she's kind. And then verse 30, she fears the Lord. Charm is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. And so let's put all that together. She provides for herself, but she's also committed to her family. She works to provide for her family. She's willing to sacrifice for her family. She supports her husband. She's wise, strong, generous, unafraid, dignified, optimistic, kind. She fears the Lord. Well, that's a pretty high standard. I understand that. That's pretty high. But that's what we want to teach our young girls to be. That's what we want to try to develop and grow into as a young woman. As we said a moment ago, her focus is her family. She loves her family. She supports her family. And that's why we find back in 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 6, as Sarah supported her husband and showed her respect to her husband Abraham, she's committed to the well-being of her children, and she finds fulfillment in these things. These things fulfill her life. Now understand, not all women marry. I understand that. Not all women marry, not all women have children, and they live a full and fulfilling and productive life in God's kingdom. And we know, you probably know women that have never married, and they live a good, full, productive life, especially in God's kingdom. But there's a difference between a woman who doesn't marry and one who considers family life a burden to be born. Almost a penalty. Almost a punishment for her to have to bear. And a barrier to living a fulfilling life. Now that's not a biblical woman. That's not biblical womanhood. Biblical womanhood is a woman who finds family, husband, and children a fulfilling aspect of her life. Well, our time's about out. So I hope that these considerations help us begin to think what a woman should be, what a godly woman should be. We haven't said everything that there is to say on the subject, but maybe it's enough to help us start thinking about these things. Beware of the messages that are being communicated to our girls, that they're just so wrong, they couldn't be much wronger. Don't be deceived by them. And if you're a young girl or young woman, growing, developing into a young woman, decide to be the kind of woman that God values and develop those qualities. Oh, you'll be out of step with the world around you. You know, I understand that. And there's that pressure to conform and be like everyone else. And I'm not saying it's easier. It'll be difficult at times. But just make your commitment. I'm going to be the kind of woman that is valuable in the sight of God. All right? And you can do that. You can succeed at that. You'll be glad that you did. Well, we want to extend the invitation tonight. There may be some here who are not Christians. And we haven't talked about how to become a Christian, obviously, but it may be that on previous occasions and previous studies, you've learned what you need to do. And you're ready to make that step. You're ready to make that commitment to put your faith in Christ, repent of your sins, confess that faith, and be baptized into Christ. You can do that tonight and leave here a Christian. Imagine that, coming here not a child of God, leaving here a child of God. What a wonderful transformation that would be. If you're already a Christian but not right with God, you know you're not right with God. We encourage you. We implore you. Don't let the night pass without doing what you need to do to get right with God. If we can help you, we'd be glad to do that. Are you subject to the invitation? Consider your standing before God. If you need to respond, make your way to the front as we stand together and sing this song.